So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to Review Man.
This is progress. See, I'm not as thick as he thinks I am, am I? This is chapter 13. This is progress. It's 4 o'clock at the Electric Ballroom. You're all having a fantastic time? Are you all having a fantastic time? That's better. This is progress. And I forgot one more thing. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Scared in case I fall off my chair, and I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Yes, I'm stuck in the middle with you, and I'm wondering what it is.
Welcome to Review Away. I am John Pollock, joined by Wei Ting, and today, this is going to be the most progressive episode of Review Away in history.
Why is that?
This is going to be progress for us.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah.
Huh. I thought you were going to start a conversation about...
We're going to talk about social issues and where the world lacks and where our podcast will march forward.
Okay, cool.
Have you been paying attention to either of the issues being raised for the Canadian federal election or the U.S. election that's coming up next year? Have you been following any politics?
Not really.
No?
Can't say
it's a big deal right now.
I'm a bandwagon jumper. I am that way with sports. Our baseball team is doing really well.
A very nice topic change.
Not even time for me to jump on the bandwagon yet.
You know what I enjoy is some of my friends are like real, like they're full out Blue Jays fans.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, now everyone's watching, but they weren't watching when the Sky Dome was empty. It's like, yeah, because they sucked.
Exactly. It's like us saying, oh, you only watched during WrestleMania. Well, I don't fault you for that.
Well, what a bizarre thought process.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man, you're only around when they're doing well. Yeah. I don't care about the Blue Jays when they're bad. I'm not going to go watch a game when they're bad. Unless I'm really bored and want to go to a baseball game. Yeah, there's going to be more interest when it's a good team as opposed to when it's a bad team. And if you're so happy that no one comes to games, then you should never root for this team to get any better or increase their salary or go after free agents. What do you want?
Listen,
you want to be a better team where you have no fans. That's what you want. You're an idiot.
I think it's a thing, you know, it's like being a fan of that band on the indie label before they got famous. Now all of a sudden they're famous, but you were there when they weren't even selling out these crowds.
I hate all that stuff. He's a tough noob. I hate that term. I hate that term. It's like, oh, you're not allowed to watch this. You haven't paid your dues to sit on your couch and watch something. Are you kidding me? This is the kind of privilege that we have to bestow upon people. Mm-hmm. Tough noob.
So anyway.
You only started watching. You're a network noob. You only started watching WWE when it was streaming. You never paid $60 for a pay-per-view. You never watched syndication, you piece of shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
People are the worst.
Yeah,
people are the worst. They try to make people feel like shit as a whole. How dare we include you?
No, I don't think there's...
You weren't around in 1925 when Gracie Jiu-Jitsu started.
Yeah.
Take that hoodie off.
Yes, yes.
You Gracie noob.
I don't know. I feel like certain people... Whatever. Like, if you're a loyal fan, I think, you know... I think it's fine to be proud of how loyal you've been, but I feel like...
I want people to know that if they're listening to this show for the very first time... Thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
Even though you weren't around during the Facebook group days. You weren't there for the Photoshop era.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how are you? This is the kickoff to year number whatever the fuck.
Seven.
Yeah. Holy moly.
Oh, I'm good. I'm fine. Yeah. I'm good. I mean, it's. I'll give you the same answer every single time. I don't know why you keep asking me.
Is this a come down for you after last week's big new blood rising? What a contrast of events we have to review from last week to this week.
Mm-hmm.
Very different.
Yeah. It's all wrestling still.
How did we think of this review? Was someone requesting it? Did we go to the thread last week?
We went to the thread, and I was randomly scrolling, and I actually...
Oh, yeah, this is the show Damien was supposed to join us for, and he ditched us, right?
I don't know. I don't remember. He didn't pick this, so I was randomly scrolling through the thread, and then I stopped, actually, at the Carmen Electra Naked Women's Wrestling League, and we had said that if we couldn't find that, we will find a backup, and that is progress. Actually, this ended up... The Naked Women's Wrestling ended up becoming a backup, and then...
were really... crossing your fingers, hoping that there'd be a problem with the progress show.
Yeah, I thought it'd be funny. But anyway, I'm here to tell you that, yes, that Naked Women's Wrestling is online.
Oh, boy.
It's on a porn website, though.
Oh.
So we'll have to...
Do you need to sign up for it?
No. No.
Because I will never do that again for a review.
No, it's on one of the free porn websites. But anyway, we're not doing that.
Do they have the clothed version? Because they did these tapings.
No.
Where they had all the women come out clothed and did the matches, and then they redid their matches naked.
Yeah. They didn't have the clothed version.
Oh.
Well, I don't know. I don't know where you'd even find that. Maybe on, like, Showtime or something. But we did find this show online, though.
Yes. We are going to be reviewing Progress Wrestling's Unbelievable Jeff free show, which is Chapter 13.
Mm-hmm.
Progress. I really like the chapters. I like how every show is numbered.
Not every show, but like specific shows.
I mean, they have their main shows are all numbered, and then they have kind of their younger talent, which are their Endeavor shows, which are, you know, same company but different idea. You know, it's amazing. I was looking up Progress. They have their shows booked through the end of December 2016. Like dates. These guys have their shit in order.
Yeah.
I very much I like the theme. They have a specific feel to these shows. Mm-hmm. I had not watched any Progress Wrestling before this. I like this show for that one reason. It gives us the reason to go check out stuff that you might not normally sit back and watch. As much as people would imagine that once I watch all the hours of wrestling every week and I have some time off, I can go watch more wrestling. That's not always as seamless as
what
it sounds.
What do you do?
In my free time,
yeah.
I go to Blue Jays games.
Oh, okay.
Just over the past 2 months, though.
Yeah.
Only since the trade deadline.
How many?
I've gone to one. I've
gone
to one during that stretch.
But you were watching a lot more now. You're watching the Jays a lot.
I watch them on TV almost every night now.
Wow.
Yeah. I just, like, not hardcore sitting in front. I turn on the game. I've got it on in the background. I'm keeping tabs, making sure the Yankees are hopefully losing.
Mm-hmm.
This was not a great weekend. But the Jays are currently playing the Yankees. Are you going to be full-fledged Blue Jays supporter during the playoffs? Are you going to be really into this?
Perhaps. I don't even know. I thought I'd be more into it now, but I just really haven't really. I don't even have a TV, so like I don't really watch the game. So I don't know. Maybe. I'll probably start watching during the playoffs. It just seems like such a big event to happen to your city, you know?
Do you think the Jays will make it to the World Series? Or do you think they're going to choke in the playoffs and get beaten by, I don't know, the Royals?
I don't know. Yes. I'm going to say yes, they'll make it. They're going to win.
We had so much we had to discuss on Monday that we forgot to mention. We went to the Jays game together last Saturday for our friend Justin's, I guess this was his part of his bachelor party?
Yeah, his local bachelor party.
Yes. How did you enjoy the game? There were like 27 of us went.
I actually liked the game a whole lot.
Yeah, it was a close game.
Yeah, it was, it felt like a bit like a wrestling match in that it was pretty much.
Red Sox got the heat.
Even Steven.
Babyface comeback.
Yeah.
And then the heels squeaked it out at the end and just hit them with their finish.
Yeah, the Jays are basically ahead by, what, like two runs heading into the ninth. And in the top of the ninth, they let four runs in.
There were a lot of run-ins.
Yes, thank you, yes. And in the bottom of the ninth, they scored two more runs, narrowing the lead to basically 1 point, but they still lost. But it was like a very good back and forth game, and all the people who left after the eighth inning, they should be sore.
So Toronto still got over in losing. That's what
no,
you're saying.
Not really.
They kind of jerry-lined it.
Well, they were heavy favorites going into this. You know, the Red Sox were like the bottom of their division, right?
Yeah. Well,
so they
won two out of three over the weekend. So the Jays, some are jumping off the bandwagon, probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not us. Once we're bandwagon jumpers, we aren't getting off the bandwagon.
I was never really on, though.
Oh, I think you kind of are.
No,
your really. Interest in the Blue Jays is you mention it every now and then.
A little.
A little?
Yeah.
Well, it was a fun game.
It was.
It wasn't completely packed at the Rogers Center. I thought all the games were going to be sold out from now through the end of the season.
It felt pretty full towards, like, especially the latter parts of the game.
Yeah, there were some noticeable
empty seats, definitely. I imagine those would be just scalpers, though.
Yeah, it sounds like playoff tickets you can already buy, even though they haven't clinched yet. I don't know how that really works, but it's going to be a madhouse there. First playoff game since 1993.
Well, at what point do they clinch? Would they officially clinch?
It's when they, once the amount of games is so little that no one can hit them for the wild card. Because you have the one game wild card game, and that will advance the other into the round of four on the American League side.
Okay.
And then we have the playoffs.
Great.
That's how it works.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah.
Well,
have you ever seen a cricket match?
Never.
No? I was talking to our friend Rob. Our South African friend Rob, who's also at the bachelor party, and he was explaining to me, you know, how much more he liked cricket than baseball.
Oh,
as we were watching this game, and he was explaining to me how cricket matches can go up to like 5 days.
Yeah,
one game.
They used to put them on pay per view.
How do you do a 5 day and these games could be 8 hours long per game.
Sounds like
We're talking like a 40-hour work week based on one game.
Well, that's some people grow up to be cricket spectators.
Yeah.
That's what they,
it sounds
major.
Like a very interesting game.
No, it doesn't.
It sure does. It
sounds like a long
game. Well, it sounds just as ridiculous as baseball would seem, I think.
I don't know about maybe the rules.
Baseball's,
the length, the sheer length sounds insane.
Baseball's a pretty ridiculous sounding game.
I don't know how you it's funny. I'm watching the old Ken Burns documentary series on Netflix on baseball that came out in 94. And they're talking about like the creation of baseball, and it's just like what an insane game to come up with. Like soccer, very self-explanatory.
Yeah, basketball,
explanatory. Hockey, basketball, you put a ball in a hoop.
Golf.
Hockey's a little wacky. I mean, when you break it down to bare bones, it's like you explain the game and then you add on ice. Like, oh, who's this idiot?
Well, there are technicalities for all that,
I guess.
Yeah,
but baseball, I mean. You'd be like, dude, you're going to have to write this down. I don't know. Fielder's choice.
Baseball and football, like, those are two games that aren't really, you know.
Football's
you can't
pretty
explain in one
complex.
Sentence. Yeah.
I mean, we're going to have lines of people, and then we're going to have one person who's the quarterback, and then.
I still don't know how to play. I still don't know the rules.
Football was always the most complex game for me when I was a kid trying to learn it because I followed hockey, baseball, basketball pretty religiously, but I could never get into football. It was just like, I had no interest in watching it. It was just like, it was constant, like, you build up to a play and the guy runs 2 yards and then we stop and then we reconvene. And it's like, oh God, I just want seamless play. That's what I think basketball and hockey would provide. You could go longer stretches where you don't have a break in the play.
It's also the fact that, you know, in Toronto, we only have the Argonauts, you know.
Only have the Argonauts.
Yeah.
Where's your Canadian pride? Grey Cup champions, 91, 96.
What else?
I don't know. They won in 2004. So they've had some Grey Cups, but no one cares.
Nah.
Do you think if the NFL was here, you'd be more interested in football?
Yeah, definitely.
See, I can't imagine being any more interested in football if the
really?
NFL was here or not. No, I just,
come on.
I've never enjoyed football.
Imagine the hysteria, the tailgate parties, just, you know, the hype.
I would watch one game every year, and it was the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And then someone at a bar would say, where were you during week two? You noob. Super Bowl noob. Anyway, not a big fan of football, even to this day. What other sport? Do you follow at any kind of regularity?
What other sports?
Anything you would ever watch with your dad growing up that you were
sports
that you'd watch together?
No,
No, nothing. You never played sports when you were younger?
I played baseball, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What was your favorite position?
I think I liked playing either shortstop or second.
I would play first or center field. Hmm. So I could run in the outfield.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Were you able to catch well? What was your thing?
I was pretty good. There was one year I was playing on my school team. I played on a house league team, and then I tried out for this select team, and I made the team. Mm-hmm. I was not one of the better players on the team, but I did make it. So I was playing on three teams at
the
exact
same time. You played baseball last week, our company game.
I did play at our company game, and you didn't.
I didn't. I couldn't make it.
Why'd you bail?
I had jiu-jitsu, and I just wasn't feeling it. I just didn't want to have to socialize.
Wow.
Yeah.
You missed out on some free pizza, some cake.
How did you do in the game? That's what I want to know.
Well, we played two mini games. The first game was, they were four inning games we played. Actually, my first at bat was my only very successful one where the first pitch came in and I totally just whiffed on it and missed. But then the second pitch, I knocked this sucker way the fuck out into center field.
Wow.
And I got to third and I was rounding and I just got greedy. And I ran home and they caught it and I got out at home. I tried to stretch into a home run. Got greedy.
You did.
And then we lost 3-2. So my run my greediness cost us the game.
How could you?
That was my recap of our baseball game. It was a lot of fun.
That sounds fun.
It was a good time.
Cool.
Okay. Are you ready for Unbelievable Way?
Nope.
Okay. We are reviewing Progress Wrestling Chapter 13 from May of 2014 at the Electric Ballroom in Camden. The show kicked off with Jim Smallman, who is the co-owner of the promotion, and he alerts us that for this particular show, they had trouble with the hard camera and audio issues, and they are putting the show up for free on YouTube, and pretty much was giving everyone a warning at the beginning of the show, don't you dare complain about this show. Mm-hmm. It's free.
Yeah.
A great kind of warning that we should put at the beginning of all our shows.
Oh, yeah. I think
it's free. Don't you dare complain.
I think it's pretty much our philosophy.
Great Psychology by Jim Smallman.
Yeah. So none of you guys can complain. I think it's a very good PR move, you know, especially with somebody like Finn Balor on the show to give this one away for free. First of all, I think show some confidence in your product that, you know, despite all a lack of a camera angle, you'll like this wrestling enough that you'll want to come back for more. And I think it's great whenever somebody can be honest, you know, especially about things like technical issues. It builds trust with your fan base.
Can you imagine if a promoter just gets on camera and says, listen, we did not white balance all three cameras at the same time. Camera two is a little off, so we're giving you the show for free, and warns you at the beginning of the show.
Sure, I'd appreciate that. You don't think, like, watching some of these ROH shows, like, every time I see footage of Joe versus Punk 2, which is...
That match is tainted to you.
Five-star match in the Wrestling Observer Newsletter, you know, one of the best matches ROH has ever done. One of the best matches of the past decade, you could say. And the colors on that, Jesus Christ, it's just like, it's disgusting.
It's disgusting.
It's really insulting to watch. You know, and
what could you do to fix that in post? Is there anything
I feel like you can fix it, but it's still not going to look perfect, and there are other issues beyond that. Anyway,
well, what did you think of this show? You are going to have much more of a sensitivity to production than I am. What did you feel about this show? I mean, this is an indie show. There's a certain charm that it is not looking like a five-star production. I didn't really have any. There were some audio problems during the show, some overmodulation, but to me it was pretty minimal.
You know, they mentioned how they didn't have a hard camera for the whole show, but honestly, it didn't really detract from my experience throughout until the latter match, where I think they could have really benefited from having that main camera. especially to show, you know, the differences in height. But I, all things considered, with only two cameras ringside, I thought the show was just, you wouldn't have really noticed it for most of the other matches. I would say above average for an indie promotion. Lighting looked fine. I mean, Jesus, you couldn't. They didn't have lighting directly in the camera lenses, so it took ROH only 15 years to fix that. So,
well, they're not as progressive. Jim Smallman notes that 700 people watched this show in London. This was their first show at the Electric Ballroom, and he wants this video to get 1 million views. They're at 50,000.
Yeah, a little bit far.
A long road to 1 million.
Someday, maybe.
Yeah, hey, ambitious goals.
Yeah.
And then says, maybe we'll become famous for doing nothing like American celebrities. I mean, gets a real jab in there to the Americans out there.
And there are British celebrities that get famous for doing nothing.
I'm sure there are, too.
Like, what is Posh Spice really, like, she didn't...
Oh, come on.
She didn't do anything.
She was a major...
What part of a major group. What songs did she sing the lead in?
She did the lead in. She was part of a group.
She's part of the group.
There's no shame in being part of a group instead of being a solo act.
She just, like... But she doesn't... She can't sing, you know? She's an integral part of that, of the Spice Girls.
Of course.
Not gonna lie.
She wasn't my favorite, though.
Who's your favorite?
No, Ginger, 100%.
Ginger is your favorite?
Oh, dude, I love Ginger Spice.
So you hopped off the bandwagon when she did.
When she quit the group, I was done.
You said goodbye, my friend. Did you, well, this is a British promotion. We have to talk about the Spice Girls. Did you buy her a solo album?
I didn't buy her solo album, but I don't know
who'd be interested.
I did go to their reunion show in 2008 at the Air Canada Centre.
That's cool. Were you ever a fan of Take That?
The hell happened? Take That? No, I wasn't a fan of Take That.
Take That, man.
The hell happened to my computer here? I'm still using an old computer because when I was in Las Vegas, I left my my power cord in my hotel room. So I'm still waiting to get that in the mail from the U.S. mail service.
Mm.
And it's been a while that I've been waiting. I've been using this hunk of shit. I hate this computer. It weighs no less than 10 pounds.
Mm.
Anyway, let's get back to this. We then cut to another co-owner, John Briley, who is instructing Chris Camara, who's a very popular soccer analyst with Sky Sports, to do the This Is Progress chants. And they're going back and forth. It's pretty much just this comedy routine. And then John Briley gets frustrated and leaves. And Chris Camara does a big promo for Progress Wrestling.
Yeah, it played a lot cuter than, you know, the description. I mean, you really have to kind of watch it. But
I had no idea who this guy is. But to this audience, I mean, he's a major soccer figure, from my understanding.
I have no clue either. But, I mean, just from looking at it, he's a soccer analyst and a former player. So I imagine he's like something like a Don Cherry in England. But he's also the man responsible for the name of this show. Unbelievable Jeff is one of his catchphrases when he's calling matches.
Didn't know that.
Yeah.
Thought it was some inside joke. Well, there you go.
If you look up Urban Dictionary,
did some research here, man. I was impressed that I was able to just find this guy's actual name.
Unbelievable Jeff is a term popularized by Chris Camara of Sky Sports News in the UK. It is used when in shock, as though something is above unbelievable or near impossible. For example, Emil Heskey has actually scored, and what a shot from outside the area. Unbelievable, Jeff.
Wow, you did it verbatim.
Did you like my accent?
You did it just like Chris Camara would yell. Our announcer for the show is Jimmy Barnett, who calls this show Solo. Fan or critic of Jimmy Barnett?
Absolute fan.
Agreed.
Absolute fan. I mean, first of all, he's not at all overbearing. He only really talks in the broadcast when he needs to. And he doesn't try to take over the broadcast by throwing in too many corny jokes. Although he does do the British sarcasm thing really well.
His self-deprecation at certain points I found very endearing. And you're right. He laid out at certain parts. He would make fun of himself at certain points. He would take little jabs every now and then. And I don't care if this is stereotypical. The British accent just commands a certain kind of credibility and authority.
Absolutely. It made me feel like I was watching the World Cup or darts, you know? Like, in a good way, is what I mean. Like, it felt official. It felt more professional.
What the fuck?
That's right.
Yeah, you would see Jimmy Barnett. I very much enjoyed this. And doing this solo for this entire show, like, no easy task.
Nope, not at all. And it was very good at laying out, you know, all the audio or the video problems to the crowd as well, explaining about how...
It got funny at a certain point where anything that went wrong, it's like, oh, experiencing some issues. Of course, that is why you are watching this for free on YouTube. And we appreciate you going to our website. And remember, this is free. It's like hitting you over the head. Yeah. Before you get on Twitter, shut the fuck up.
Mm-hmm.
It's free. So it started off with Rampage Brown taking...
Before we go on, we should talk a little bit about the promotion itself, John.
Yes.
I mean, they're based in London. They're founded by two men, Jim Smallman and John Briley.
Who are the guys you saw off the top there.
In 2011. And there's a lot of emphasis on using UK talent only on these shows. Obviously, you know, they'll bring guys occasionally, but most of the guys here I've not heard of. And the whole concept is what? Strong style wrestling with a punk rock vibe?
Yeah, very much so. That's how you see a lot of the characters, very much, you know, punk inspired, and, you know, a lot of the music choices that they have. And this audience is just incredible.
Instead of a world title,
My favorite part.
They have a staff.
This is like awesome.
Yeah, a world title staff.
Which one day they're going to run a venue where they can do a ladder match with that staff hanging over the ring.
Well, they try to, I guess.
This staff is just, it's awesome.
They got rid of it.
There are way too many title belts in pro wrestling.
Well, they changed it, though. They changed it to a title belt.
Well, that's a major mistake.
Yeah, but
it should be the staff.
At this point, it was the staff.
Yeah.
Which I think shows, you know, a lot of creativity and the fact that, you know, it's a promotion that's not necessarily, you know, one that is just trying to be derivative of the things that came before it.
This was actually the second show that they had run at the Electric Ballroom. Their prior home was the Garage, or as it's properly pronounced, the Garage.
The Garage.
The Garage. So the Electric Ballroom, a bigger venue, 700 people. And they've
Wasn't that the place where on the British boot camp that they did some of those matches?
It might have been. I think so. There's a Garage in Scotland as well,
which
we could be confusing it with, but you might be right. I'm not quite sure. I'm sure some of our UK listeners will inform us of any inaccuracies. But the show kicked off with Rampage Brown taking on Darrell Allin. And immediately, Barnett apologizes for the smoke that has engulfed the building, saying, "This is not a coffee shop in Amsterdam." I was sold on this guy immediately. Already very fun. Very small ring that they work in. I mean, this was...
Very small. That's the first thing you notice. And I wonder if this would even be 14 by 14 instead of like...
I thought 14 by 14 was my guess of what this is. And for comparison's sake out there, folks, WWE works on a 20 by 20. So
WCW was 18.
Yeah, this was... When that tag match started, dude, I thought I was going to hate that match. Just for the sheer... Because of the ring.
I actually thought it helped. It helped make some of these smaller guys actually look kind of bigger in the ring. And I wonder if it helps in terms of pace and speed when, you know, running ropes and all that, too.
It can become... I know the other way around, when people adjust to a WWE ring and having those extra couple of feet, it can be a bit of a transition because you're so used to just working in a standard size ring.
And NXT,
the WWE is a much bigger ring.
That's why in NXT, in the training facility, it's all tall.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But 14, I mean, apparently it's... It's not unusual in the UK, but it's certainly the first thing you notice. But I can't say it made that big of a difference to me at all.
Rampage Brown is a former Progress Wrestling champion. Allin, meanwhile, has been with the company since their very first show and is the head trainer of their training facility. Barnett says he doesn't have to do a lot of talking because the crowd is much more entertaining than him, and he was very good at knowing this crowd and laying out when they had some clever chant, and the crowd would just... I mean, they were a very fun crowd that I never thought
took the focus off the match onto them. They enhanced a lot. Their singing was great. It was a fun European crowd.
Absolutely. I mean, I think anytime, you know, a WWE goes to the UK and experiences a crowd like this, or even the post-Mania shows, it's the crowd that makes these shows most of the time. And here, you know, I imagine you get this type of crowd every single time you put on one of these indie shows where all these fans, the most hardcore of the hardcores, get packed into this 700-seat venue. And they're just as much a part of the show as the wrestlers are, for sure.
Are you disappointed we did not get a rendition of your favorite song of 2015, Shoes Off?
Oh, boy. No.
Shoes Off.
Yes, I know.
Your popular video. The most popular video ever.
The Conor McGregor video.
Yes. Maybe that's more of an Irish tradition.
No, I think actually the YouTube comments all say that it was a Manchester thing.
Oh, okay. Not a soccer fan. I should have qualified earlier on as well.
Not yet.
I'm going to get hate mail for that one. Anyway, Brown is beating down Allen. He drapes him on the top rope. He's selling his ribs. Allen finally runs and misses with a shoulder going into the post. There's a hurricane run off the apron by Allen to the floor. Allen's kicks here, I thought, were a great part of his offense. He's very quick with them. Diverse style of kicks as well. And then Brown Irish whips Allen face first into the middle rope. And then hits a pile driver for the win, 8 minutes and 9 seconds, and he was still selling his shoulder despite the win afterwards. But a different kind of finish that you don't always see, where a guy just is thrown into the rope, which I liked. Different kind of finish. This was a good opener.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought both guys looked
nothing
pretty
too crazy.
No, exactly. And I think it's something that, you know, in a lot of indies we see where people do too much, but in this, I just thought the guys kept it pretty tame and quick, and they both look solid.
Then we had Dynamite Pete Dunne, who would be all over this show, taking on Robbie X. Horrible name.
Robbie X?
Robbie X.
Is it any worse than
anything X?
X is just too much of a 90s thing?
It's too much of a nothing thing.
Okay.
This was the first round of the Natural Progression Series for younger talent. We saw a handsprint.
What is that?
The Natural Progression Series?
Yeah, what is that?
They explained it. It was just a tournament of talent that had not performed in progress before.
See.
There was a handspring into a Hurricane Rana by Robbie X. Then they had a momentary loss of footage, and then we rejoined the match afterwards. But this is free. And then
it's because they're so honest about it. You know, there's like no trying to hide it. They didn't really hide it with like crowd shots or anything, which they could have done. Instead, it was just like a blank text on the screen saying, sorry for the loss of footage or something like that. And because they're so honest about it, you can't get mad. It's, you know, it's endearing.
Barnett notes during a move that all moves are better when you yell die as you execute them. Then there's a surfboard that is applied to the knees by Dunn, and he just jumps up and stomps down on the knees and then applies the trailer hitch, which is like a modified Indian death lock.
Jamie Noble's
old submission. And then Robbie X calls attention to his face, which it looks all flush.
He doesn't call attention to it. The crowd starts chanting, red face, red face.
Well, then he points to it.
And then he calls attention to it.
And then we got the best song of the entire show.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a red face on his face.
Yeah, to the tune of he's got the whole world in his hands.
And the fans now singing, he's got a red face on his face.
Really, like,
this is great.
These UK fans are like, they're the best. They're creative, you know, they're all in sync with each other, and they're just fun.
Dunn is on the floor, and Robbie X hits an acai moonsault. Then Dunn catches him in the ring with a tombstone, and Robbie X rolls down to the floor. And they mentioned this promotion they did where the promotion had to buy a new canvas for the ring,
mm-hmm.
and the fans chipped in, and as a result they got all their names written on the canvas.
It was some version of a Kickstarter campaign, I believe, for new mat. And again, I think it goes back to the whole, you know, their whole mandate of injecting a punk rock sort of philosophy towards his promotion. I love that. I love that they did something like this and put all their fans' names on the mat. It's so symbolic and, I mean, practical as well.
Robbie X lands on his feet after trying to execute a moonsault, then comes off the ropes into a forearm smash and a sit-out powerbomb by Dunn for a two count, then goes for a cloverleaf and loses the legs, but then applies it on his second try. Gets out of that. Dunn gets his knees up for a moonsault, hits a sit-out powerbomb, and then applies the cloverleaf, and Pete Dunn gets the win at 9 minutes and 56 seconds. Some stuff around the finish that wasn't super smooth, but I think Pete Dunn, he really stood out for me in this match as a guy that he's a babyface in this particular show.
Is he redface?
No, Robbie X was redface. But Pete Dunn, I think he's got like a great heel face. And I think if he, seriously, I think this guy, if he eliminated a lot of like the crazy acrobatic stuff, this guy could have a really great submission-based style, and I think he could be an excellent heel at some point down the road. I thought he looked really good in this match.
Yeah, I was impressed by both guys here. I thought both men wrestled what I think in North America we would consider a very stereotypical British style, with a lot of good technical groundwork, really interesting chaining sequences that you'll see from, you know, guys like guys like Regal and Danielson, of course. And I just thought another really good match. I thought all these guys that I've seen so far were just very capable.
Up next was No Gimmicks Required Michael Gilbert, the former Mikey Whiplash.
Yes.
A horrendous name.
Mikey Whiplash. What's the story there?
I guess a playoff Mikey Whipwreck.
And was Mikey Whipwreck in the promotion?
No, I don't think so. I don't think he had any connection to Progress. Eddie Dennis is one half of the tag team champions, and he is from Wales, part of the Defend Indie Wrestling group, and was very over to this crowd. And Dennis has an alter ego, Eddie Mysterio Jr., as he puts on a Rey Mysterio Jr. mask.
Mm-hmm.
And Dennis is essentially all comedy and just yelling out jokes, and Gilbert is the no-nonsense wrestler, essentially, is our contrast here. The match begins. Gilbert misses and lands on the middle rope and avoids a 619 as Barnett takes a big shot, stating that he avoided the first 619 that would ever have actually hurt somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Not a fan of the 619. The crowd starts chanting Gilbert in the style of Gilbert. And then Gilbert is wearing him down, takes off the mask that he's wearing, applies an STF. Dennis gets the rope break. They're singing that Gilbert is a wanker, attacks the left knee of Dennis. All his offense is grounded, wraps his knee around the post. Dennis comes back with a rolling forearm, then an exploder. And Gilbert just hits him with this combination, like lariat to the front and then to the back of the head, getting a two count. And then Gilbert puts the mask back onto Dennis, slaps him as he's mocking him, and calls him a funny man. A funny man. And then Dennis hits a tilt-a-whirl, sends him into the ropes, hits the 6-1 knee, because he explains he's 6'6" and can't hit a 6-1-9. The roll-up is reversed into a cradle as Gilbert sneaks the win, 15 minutes and 53 seconds.
I enjoyed this match, too. And I think both men did a very good job. I think this... Eddie Mysterio Jr., I thought, played a really fun, comedic babyface. And here, he was basically selling for what felt like 90% of this match to this guy, Michael Gilbert, who was about as, you know, sort of as, if Eddie Gilbert, sorry, if Eddie Dennis was...
Eddie Gilbert.
If Eddie Dennis was, you know, sort of your very... stereotypical comedy wrestler, Michael Gilbert dude was pretty much the complete opposite, in that he played such a serious dude that it was almost comical, in that he would only do ground-based wrestling, only, like, in fact, he would call for serious selling from his opponent when he would apply for, like, his submissions. And I thought it was great. I thought it's always wonderful when you can... I felt like there's a lot of humor in this match for that reason, and I felt like it was only it was a match that you needed an indie crowd to make work. Like you can't do this in a WWE audience where the audience wouldn't really get that level of that you're trying to hit on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean watching this show as a whole, I mean Eddie Dennis is like presented later in the show as like a pretty serious babyface, and here it's like he's the joke. And
but it's a mid-card thing. He's not. He doesn't.
Yeah, but then he was in the main angle later.
Well, I mean, we all have
in a
sides.
Knife angle.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know.
Wasn't he the one who came down to save?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's just a babyface saving dude from being knifed.
Well, you would hope most babyfaces would. Then we had our four-way tag match. It's a number one contenders match, and it would be an elimination match. So we had the team of London Riots, consisting of James Davis and Rob Lynch, against Project Ego, which are Chris Travis and Martin Kirby. Screw Indie Wrestling, with Mark Haskins, who you'll remember was in TNA a number of years ago and was part of that match with Austin Aries, where the two were clearly on different pages, and it kind of just fell apart. Mark Haskins' teammate is Shaw Samuels. And then we have the Swords of Essex. Will Ospreay, who a lot of people are more familiar with now, was just part of a Battle of Los Angeles, and his tag partner, Paul Robinson. So we had eight bodies here in this extremely small ring. I didn't know how this was going to go, but you had a lot of good talent in this particular match. Robinson tagged in early. He's the tiniest of all eight of these guys. And then Ospreay tosses him into Samuels for a Hurricane Rana that he barely makes. And Shaw Samuels is losing his suspenders. Not the best wardrobe choice here. They were referred to as braces, but he was losing these braces off of his... He had like
that's what they call them.
Braces.
They call them braces.
Samuels then chokes Travis.
What do they call braces, though?
Braces? Yeah. Your suspensions. In your teeth.
In your teeth, okay.
Yeah. That you can get applied at the garage. Samuels is choking Travis with a red and yellow scarf and then a shirt as the referee keeps removing these items. Samuels gets upset as James Davis blind tags himself in, which I don't know why. It's that stupid spot in an elimination match. Like, why would you care if someone tags in or not? It's elimination. He's not going to steal the fall off of you. You got to get eliminated. He's giving you a rest. Samuels then is tagged back in, walks over, slaps Davis to tag him back in immediately. They're chanting evil Jesus at Haskins, who then does a pose as if he's Jesus on the cross with his head leaning over and singing he's got the whole world in his hands. This was right as that song was becoming very popular through Bray Wyatt last year. All eight are in. They brawl all over the place by the fans. Travis and Kirby hip-toss Robinson over the top to everyone on the floor and then follow that with a suicide dive, somersault combination to the floor. Ospreay then climbs to the top and hits a spiral tap off the top to the floor, which Barnett just summarized with...
Will Ospreay now up to... Surely not. Ospreay up to the top. Fuck me.
Barnett knew how to choose his spots here. This looked nuts, going to the floor and hitting everybody. They went into this absolute insane series of spots in the ring. We saw a superplex, shooting star press, rainmaker, wrist clutch exploder, ending with a spear, everyone going through their arsenal. And then Travis and Kirby double team Haskins, then Samuels. The count is ongoing, and Project Ego and Screw Indie Wrestling are counted out together around 17 minutes into the match, taking out four of the eight.
Mm-hmm.
Continued with Lynch, who ditched his T-shirt, and they double-teamed Ospreay. This turned into just your classic tag match, cutting off the ring with the heat on Ospreay, isolating him away from his partner. They were singing for Ospreay in the style of the Olé song. And then there was a handspring into a double Pele kick by Ospreay, makes his way over to Paul Robinson, his tag partner, who leaves him hanging and jumps down to the floor and leaves Ospreay, prompting Jimmy Barnett to ask, "What the fuck?" And brings up the two who were having words at the end of the last show, and they team up Lynch and his partner Davis, they hit their finish, the district line, and Ospreay kicks out of that. They say no one has ever kicked out of the district line. Ospreay comes off the ropes into a double ace crusher, and then Ospreay misses with a 450 splash, gets pressed in the air, speared by Lynch in midair, and they get the win at 23 minutes and 32 seconds. So James Davis and Rob Lynch get a future tag title match. And Paul Robinson screwing Will Ospreay.
Mm-hmm.
But a lengthy match here, and kind of, you know, spectacular in terms of what they did in these 23 and a half minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I'll admit that this match was a little tough for me to get into, mostly due to my unfamiliarity with a lot of the wrestlers here. You know, I just wasn't really attached to anybody, so I didn't really have a desire to see anybody win or lose. I always laugh at the cliche of you know, the dude turning on his partner mid-match, even though he was helping him throughout the rest of the match.
That's a usual issue with these when you do the turns late in the match and screwing yourself essentially out of a title shot.
Yeah. So, I mean, it felt a little long to me this match, but it certainly didn't feel that way for this crowd. So, I can only imagine this is not as much of a match for newcomers.
Well, then Jimmy Havoc comes into the ring, who is the current Progress champion, the holder of the Progress staff.
Yep.
And what a message he has for the audience.
Fuck every single one of you cunts!
And seats Will Ospreay into a chair, ties his hands behind his back. They continue singing. He threatens to kill Mark Andrews tonight because he's been booked in a stupid fucking ladder match. And then Havoc lifts up his pants, and he's got a switchblade. It's like, oh my, this is going to new territory quickly. And they're teasing, doing the scene out of Reservoir Dogs where they cut off the guy's ear. So Will Ospreay is tied to the chair, and the save is made by the baby faces.
You didn't mention that they played the music.
Oh, I'm about to... yeah.
They played the music before the baby face comes in, but they played Stuck in the Middle with You on the loudspeaker.
Well, yeah, the baby faces can't save a man from near death until their music is prompted.
Okay. Anyway, so it was hilarious. Like, they were in the middle of a wrestling match, and the dude sits him in a chair about to cut his ear off while Stuck in the Middle of with You is playing on the loudspeaker.
I thought this was utterly stupid.
It was hilarious.
Well, Ospreay is freaked out that his, I guess, ear was nearly cut off, and it was... who was out here? We had Eddie Dennis, we had Pete Dunne, and we had Mark Andrews running out for the save and chasing off Havoc here and the London Riots, who are all in a group together. And I guess Will Ospreay has been saved. So multiple feuds for Will Ospreay coming out of this.
Yeah, I actually paused this match to rewatch the end of Reservoir Dogs. Because it just not remind
oh,
me.
And how did they nail this?
Pretty well, I'd say.
Oh, good for them.
Yeah. No chair shots in Reservoir Dogs.
But. No. Our match to follow that angle was Tommy End. How did you like Jimmy Havoc? I thought, great promo. This guy's a tremendous heel.
Yeah, seemed like one, definitely. Seemed like somebody that, you know, you could hate just by looking at him.
Yeah, I thought he just had a natural with his hateability.
Yeah, with his emo, you know, sort of hipster haircut.
Yeah. No, I thought he was a very, very good heel. Very wacky angle, though. Tommy End against El Ligero was next, who hails from Los Angeles, Mexico.
No. It was like Los Sanchez, Mexico. Or
oh, I thought they said Los Angeles, Mexico. No. Completely different.
He's a British guy, though.
Yeah. Complete different contrast here with the styles. Of course, Tommy End is a guy that legit, you know, kickboxing background. and is a trainer at Stefan Struve's old gym in Holland.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. Okay. Tommy N blocks a Hurricane Rana with a cartwheel, but then Ligero hits it on the next try, sends Ligero into the air, connects with a knee. All of Tommy N's striking, it's just like a very much a stand-up style and like a kickboxer in a pro wrestling match. That's his style. Ligero hit a Code Red style of move with N landing on his chest instead of rotating through. N comes off the turnbuckle with a double knees, takes an enziguri, and then N hits him with a head kick, catches Ligero off a handspring, but then gets rolled up by Ligero. There was a deadlift, bridging German for a two count, misses the double foot stomp, went through a bunch of high-flying spots, and then Ligero comes off the top with a splash, has Tommy N beat when Michael Gilbert comes down to the ring and pulls Ligero's foot from the cover, and the DQ is called at 11 minutes and 8 seconds. Ligero is pissed that Michael Gilbert has cost him the match, and the audience is pissed that they've seen the DQ and a non-finish here. What did you think up until this point?
I thought both these guys were obviously very good and obviously very seasoned and experienced. I had not heard of either of these two men.
You've met Tommy End.
When?
He was at that party we went to over WrestleMania weekend.
Oh, shit. No way.
Yeah, you talked to him even.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, we all talked to him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I had not seen this guy wrestle.
Okay.
I wonder why, you know, the WWE even bothers with the bullshit that is tough enough when you have such great guys like this all around the world that never get their chance.
Tommy End, I think, is a really, really solid talent, a different enough style from what you typically see from a lot of guys. I just think it's a great look. I think Tommy End is a super talent. He's been doing this a long time. I think he debuted in like 2000, and it's really over the past couple of years that he's gotten a lot of notoriety coming over to PWG. Of course, he's wrestled for years at WXW in Germany. The match then gets restarted with Ligero opting to restart the match, and then it just ends immediately with Tommy End applying a dragon sleeper, and the match only went another 33 seconds, and Ligero taps out, and Gilbert returns, attacks Ligero, applies a guillotine, and then Gilbert leaves and yells, "You're better than this, Ligero."
Ooh.
Fighting words from Michael Gilbert.
See, if you, the guy left the guillotine on for a long time here.
Yes.
And I think Braun Strowman could take some advice.
Is it time for a new submission for Braun Strowman?
I thought it was since the first day.
I mean, you can give him submissions that are much easier for him to execute. I wouldn't want to give him something where he could legitimately fuck someone up like an arm bar or a hammerlock or something, but
I don't hate it. They're worse finishers. I just think it looks a little goofy, and I think he just keeps it on, doesn't keep it on long enough.
There's the nipple ring issue for you.
The nipples are very distracting. Tell me it's not. Come on. That's a very low cut.
Well, ever since you've said that, now that's what I focus on.
Anytime he lifts up his arms, those things pop out.
Well, they now sell these things. I saw this on Bill Maher was talking about it on his show on the weekend. They now have male pasties.
Oh, yeah?
Called Mr. Nipple or something.
What
and
for?
It's
tank
for guys that might wear tight shirts and okay. can now put them on their nipples so that their nipples are not distracting to people.
Oh, wow. Well, great. Thank you.
Sounds like the stupidest thing. I've never heard any guy ever be worried, "Oh, man, my nipples are showing through this." Zack Sabre Jr. and Prince Devitt was up next, two of the more well-known personalities on this particular show.
At what point was this in Devitt's timeline?
Well, Devitt had finished up with New Japan the prior month, and this was one of, if not his last matches before going to NXT. It might have been his last one.
It wasn't his last one in progress. He was in the World Cup.
Oh, that's right. He comes back for the World Cup, so it wasn't. But he was on his final stretch of shows before he would report to Florida. And Zack Sabre Jr., a tremendous talent. Devitt comes out. As good as some of his entrances have been in NXT, and certainly he... I think the ultimate one was at the Tokyo Dome where he comes out in the coffin. But this one, in terms of just an outfit, this was tremendous as the Joker.
He went full Heath Ledger Joker here in costume and
this
makeup.
This blows away Joker Sting.
Blew away. Yeah, yeah. Well, this was almost a direct ripoff, and I say that in the best way, you know, because he looked fucking cool as this Joker, Heath Ledger Joker.
Last, I'm gonna go off on a segue here, but it ties in together. What last week? Luke Thomas at MMAfighting.com, he was interviewing Liam McGarry ahead of his fight, and they were at the media day.
Mm-hmm.
And Liam McGarry is wearing, like, this purple jacket. And Luke Thomas is asking him about, what's with the purple jacket? It looks kind of like the Joker, or like a Joker theme or something like that. And I don't think Liam McGarry tied it together. So, I'm just trying to look nice. I don't think a Joker. I'm trying to look serious here. Like, he was insulting him, saying it looks like a joke what you're wearing or something. I don't think he realized the connection of the purple with the Joker character.
Gotcha.
It was rather amusing. Anyway, it was the look that Prince Devitt was going for. And, I mean, just the paint, the green hair.
He could pull off a lot of these. And, like, later on, like... And these are only one-time things, too. Like, it's not like he repeats these that often. And I think we see guys, like... do it once in a while, but anyway, I think Devitt is somebody who in particular pays a lot of attention to his entrances, obviously, and doesn't pull him out more than once. Like, I don't believe that he dressed up as the Joker beyond any time after this.
Like, it is stunning how much different this guy comes across when it's like the face paint is on or an outfit like this, as opposed to just straight up Fergal Devitt, who comes out and just, like, the amount of he has so much more charisma during a match when his face is covered than this.
Definitely.
It's almost like Cody Rhodes. Like, say what you will about Stardust, he has so much more charisma as Stardust than he does as Cody Rhodes.
Yes, yes. Well, they're playing different characters. And you could tell, you know, Devitt here was basically, in the middle of his matches, he was kind of channeling a bit of that Heath Ledger Joker character within him. But I think, you know, again, a guy who puts a lot of effort into his makeup, his costumes. And I wonder, you know, how much use he gets out of these. Like, does he just, like, throw them out afterwards? Or does that green vest end up becoming part of his wardrobe?
Oh, I would imagine you just mix and match with other clothing. I wouldn't get rid of any of this.
Yeah.
Like, who would throw out a purple suit?
Yeah, well, I would probably give it to somebody. I'd give it to Jason Agnew, that's who.
You could do that.
But I don't know how much use I would get out of, you know, a purple suit in my daily life.
You never know.
It also costs quite a bit of money, I would think, you know, to get this whole thing done.
Like, if you were a massive Prince fan.
Yeah.
And, you know, God forbid the man passed away or something.
True.
Would you not wear a purple suit in honor of his memory?
That is very true. And maybe someday we'll get a Finn Balor dressed as Prince.
Hey, totally possible.
Yeah, that's what
definitely.
I want to see.
Zack Sabre Jr. did not come out in any kind of a suit.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Finn Balor, I suppose, making all that New Japan money, probably has the budget to afford, you know, a Heath Ledger makeup once in a while. But I don't know if Zack Sabre Jr. has that same.
His whole day was probably spent on this makeup job.
Yeah.
Not to mention, it kind of goes unnoticed in this match. He had all this shit written on his back that one could make out. Did you see it?
Yeah, it was.
What did it say?
It was the Joker quote from the movie.
It says,
"We stop looking for monsters under the bed when we realize they're inside of us."
Oh wow!
It's a quote from the movie.
That's a great quote. He should put on a T-shirt if it's not like a copyright quote.
I would assume that it's copywritten.
So the match begins. Zack Sabre Jr. this time, one half of the GHC Junior Heavyweight Tag Champions, and they run through during his intro every title and accolade that Prince Devitt has ever won. Everything. And Devitt's just like nodding his head. Yep.
Lego.
Did that.
Lego
did that.
Builder.
Yeah. Should have come out to Nas, maybe.
Yes.
Yeah. So Devitt starts off immediately with a big pace, hits a running dropkick and double foot stomp, getting a two count, and then hits a drop kick and pulls out a Joker card from his trunks and puts it on the forehead of Zack Sabre Jr.
Yes.
What?
Did you like that?
Oh, you hated that, didn't you?
No, I didn't hate it. No.
What?
I didn't. I just laughed because you're smirking as you're saying that. Like you were about to say that you thought it was ridiculous.
No. I thought it was... Hey, it played to the Joker theme here.
Yes.
Sabre Jr. then goes after the left arm of Devitt and is twisting his fingers, and it leads to, like, this lull where a fan yells, "Devitt, stop being such a joker!" And there was the immediate laughter, which so quickly turned into fans booing this fan out. Like, it was... Like, it was something I would say recapping this match, like a lame joke of mine, and this crowd had no patience for this. Their immediate reaction was laughter.
You wouldn't stoop to this level.
No. So Sabre Jr. then bends the middle finger of Devitt towards the fan at ringside. Sabre Jr. then scissors the arm, falling backwards against the legs, puts in a hammer lock, and Devitt then eventually comes back with these huge chops to Zack Sabre Jr. There's a running kick off the apron to the chest of Devitt, pulls him in, and then Devitt fires back with a chop, gets a chair.
Yeah. It was, sorry, that whole chop sequence was just such a simple thing where he was dragging Sabre Jr. to every corner and delivering a very, very stiff chop in every corner. And just, I thought something so simple like that didn't take a ton of damage. Obviously, those things hurt. But to be able to just segment a part of a match visually like that, dragging a guy to every corner to deliver one chop, I thought created a moment in the match that really stood out.
Well, then they did this crazy deal on the floor where they Devitt seated Sabre Jr. onto a chair and then hit this running drop kick, which sent Sabre Jr. like literally flying into the crowd. Oh, there's no barricade, so he just flew off this chair into the crowd. This looked nuts.
Yeah, again, great. It looked very good.
There's a double foot stomp and a reverse bloody Sunday for a two count by Devitt in the ring. Sabre Jr. makes a comeback, hits a half Nelson suplex and a penalty kick to the chest, applies an armbar. The rope break is made by Devitt, who then hits a brainbuster, recovers, goes for the armbar and ends up in the ropes. And then it ends with a big clothesline, double foot stomp by Devitt. He's still clutching his left arm, which has been worked over the whole match, and hits the bloody Sunday and gets the win at 12 minutes and 51 seconds. Got a standing ovation afterwards. A really excellent match between these two, and especially in the time they were allotted.
I like this match a lot too, and you know, I thought, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but would you say these two were the most well-known of the whole people on the roster?
Yeah, I mean, this audience is very familiar, of course, with all of these, but I think for a lot of people watching it, those are the two that they're going to be most familiar with.
And I loved how, you know, the two international stars on the show aren't even given the main event. You know, it's sort of doing the whole thing, saying that it's a strategy I like, you know, where you bring in the celebrities, but you make sure that your audience recognizes that your own stars are above them. And I love that they did a lot in this match, but they didn't overshadow what could have come, what was supposed to come in the main event. You know, they didn't go too crazy with a lot of their stuff. I mean, a lot of the stuff that sticks out to me was simple stuff, like the dragging the guy to each corner to deliver chops, or kicking a dude into the crowd sitting on a chair. I thought Zack Sabre Jr.'s technical wrestling was really fun to watch. All of his armbar variations were really cool to see. You know, it makes me wonder why, like, somebody like Alberto Del Rio or anybody who uses the armbar as a pro wrestling finisher doesn't employ more variations of it, because you just go on YouTube, there are a million armbar variations from different setups. And he did one here where he did it after a pinfall. And that's just an armbar from side control.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I really like watching that. And I thought both guys came across like really big stars, obviously Devitt in particular, but it was a match that definitely lived up to those expectations.
Yeah, and to your point about you know, contrasting it to the main event, Jimmy Havoc cut this promo before the show, basically saying everyone's talking about Devitt and Zack Sabre Jr., and he's just playing like he's overlooked by Progress Wrestling, and he's been put into this stupid ladder match, and kind of played off the fact that to many people the main event was Devitt and Zack Sabre Jr. And that takes us to what was the official main event, Jimmy Havoc defending the Progress Championship against Mark Andrews, who you now see in TNA, in a ladder match with the ring announcer. I love this. They had both guys in the ring, and they do the big introduction for Mark Andrews, and then the ring announcer.
The ring announcer is the owner.
Yeah, Jim Smallman.
Yes.
And introduces Havoc with such disgust in his voice, like just disgusted by this man. I liked it. Very subtle, but a great kind of just indicating that Jimmy Havoc is this horrendous person that they're not a fan of. And this is where we see the Progress Wrestling staff that Jimmy Havoc carries into the ring, and they have a clipboard above the ring to signify what the winner will be taking. What a trade-off from a staff to a fucking clipboard.
The clipboard says one IOU world title.
Well, great.
It's funny because, like, in the end, it doesn't fucking matter what's the top.
It's an object, yes.
Although he had a lot of trouble getting this clipboard.
Well,
down.
This was this clipboard would not sell. They noted just in passing here. Barnett notes that Havoc got this title match after threatening to set a man on fire.
Well, yeah,
he's got some very violent means to by which he like cutting ears off and lighting people on fire.
Would that have been a scene from another movie? You think
Man on Fire? Maybe I don't know.
Could have been. Yeah.
Immediately they pull out what has to be the shittiest looking ladder I've ever seen in a ladder match in professional wrestling.
I don't know what kind of ladders they have over.
I don't know what their hope was for this tiny ladder. It just, it didn't even like,
dude,
open up.
This ladder was like one of those fancy new style ladders that weren't like in a V shape, upside down V shape. It was more of an upside down Y. And, I could only imagine that whatever hardware store they went to, they didn't sell the old school ladders. Because that's what you need in a pro wrestling match. You don't need these fancy new technologies.
Or to screw up a ladder match. There's a table set up on the floor, and they fought on top of the table. And this table was about to give out right as Andrews hit a side effect, putting both through. Andrews then pulls out a larger ladder, which prompts the crowd to chant, "That's a ladder." And the middle part that you always see go horizontal, it breaks right away.
A lot can go wrong.
What a piece of garbage these ladders were they had on hand. Havoc attacks him with a chair, throws it at his face. They fought on the edge of the apron with a DDT delivered to Havoc, and he falls down to the ground and then has to awkwardly place himself onto the ladder, and the crowd definitely took notice of this very painful setup that Havoc had to execute. And then moves as Andrews goes to the top. They go back to the edge of the apron and fight with Havoc powerbombing Andrews off the apron and through a table on the floor. Continues beating down Andrews, whips a chair at his face, runs at Andrews, and hip tosses Havoc into a chair in the corner. Then they would fight through the crowd and up onto the stage at the entranceway where there's a table on the floor and a razor's edge is blocked, and then Havoc is kicked off the stage, again has to land on this table and place himself, and Andrews follows with a somersault senton off the stage going through the table. They fought back into the ring. There was two chairs set up in a seated position, and a hurricane run off the top sends Havoc through both of the chairs. And then we got to the run-ins. First, it was London Riots running in to stop Andrews from climbing the ladder. Then Eddie Dennis and Pete Dunne ran in for the save. They hit double dives to the floor. Andrews is climbing, doesn't grab the title, because instead he decides to execute a crossbody off the ladder from inside the ring to take out everyone on the floor, with Barnett trying to cover that he was deciding between the title and saving his friends, but in doing so, took out his two friends. I hate this spot. I fucking hate it. In cage matches when they do it, and in ladder matches too. Why you have the match won? No, I've got to do my spot. I hate this spot. Anyway, they battle on the ladder, and then, I thought the last spot was dumb. They're punching back and forth, and then both lean back and just nail each other skull on skull. Like a really hard collision. Listen, any kind of damage to your head, I would certainly question why you're doing it. If you are an indie talent making what I am going to venture to guess is very little money in the hopes of one day being signed, and you're going to take trauma to your head, just the chance you could get a concussion, it's just insane why you would do something like that when that can go back and bite you in the ass later, when you've got to pass medicals to get signed. I don't know why anyone would do this on an indie show.
Maybe they're not looking to get signed. Maybe a guy like this is just Jimmy Havoc, who's done a lot of like death matches and things like that. What if maybe he's just happy doing this?
Well, if you're happy just knocking your cranium into someone else's head, and that's your passion, then nothing I can do to stop you. This was just a sick-looking spot. They fought on the turnbuckle. Havoc gets kicked off and falls to the table on the floor.
It's the problem with these matches, though. Like, you set up a ladder match, people are going to expect, you know, a TLC-style match. People are going to expect a match with crazy, crazy bumps.
Absolutely they are. I would say, though, that head that headbutt spot got no reaction. It was like not even any, didn't work into the finish. It was just nothing. It was just done for the sake of doing it. Andrews then climbs, and then Paul Robinson, who we saw earlier on turn on Will Ospreay, he runs in and destroys Mark Andrews with chair shots just over and over and over again, shakes hands with Jimmy Havoc, who then climbs and grabs the fought over clipboard. And that was his second match of the night, was him against the clipboard, which it would not come down. He had to, like, unscrew the fucking thing.
He must have just ripped the paper off.
Yeah, this match probably should have been 24 minutes. Instead, it went 24-40, where the clipboard was the last 40 seconds of the match. And then attacks Mark Andrews with the clipboard and stands with his staff and leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Hell of a visual. Yeah. And then Pete Dunne and Eddie Dennis check on Andrews. The crowd applauds him. And that's how the show ends, with them helping Andrews to the back as we get a credit roll at the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
So that ended it. I thought there was a lot to this main event. It was not my, you know, they worked really hard in this match, but there was a lot of run-ins, a lot of unnecessary stuff. But it was, you know, an entertaining ladder match, but not my match of the show.
No, I didn't think the main event really lived up to the expectations set forward by the rest of the show, because I felt the undercard was very strong. I was expecting the main event to kind of blow me away, which maybe those are unfair, you know, expectations, but I can say that it didn't necessarily. It felt like there was a lot of dead time where I didn't feel like they were had much flow. I felt like this match probably hurt the most from the lack of a hard camera, especially for the high spots, but also because they fought around the ring so much, I think the hard camera helps give the viewer a sense of orientation inside the room and just kind of helps tie all the other cameras together. Otherwise, it's just a ton of like axis crossing. You kind of get, you kind of get disoriented. So perhaps that was, because I was watching the rest of the show and I was thinking, well, why couldn't they have released this? I thought the rest of the show looked fine. Perhaps it was just simply this, or maybe it was just a good PR move in general. But it's not to say that this was a bad match at all. It really wasn't. It's just because the rest of the show I thought was so good, this, you know, came across like an above average match only, whereas I thought the others were very good matches.
What did you think of the show overall? What was your grade?
Overall, I was really impressed. I think, you know, it shows that the UK really has an incredible scene going on that doesn't get enough publicity here, I don't think. I mean, I'm like, I watch a show like this, and I just see all these guys that I've never heard of, but they're all really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, it's almost like, you know, being a fan of Marvel your whole life, and then all of a sudden you discover DC Comics, and here are all these fleshed out characters with, you know, an established fan base that are all, like, that really feel just as good as any of the indie level talent that we have over here in North America. I think everybody is very technically proficient. It's stiff, creative, and the crowds, I think, are the best in the world right now in the UK. So I thought this presentation was very good. You know, I have to commend, you know, good job by the editor and the cameraman that they did have here, by, because I don't think it's an easy feat, you know, only having two cameras to work with. And I thought the editor and the cameraman did a very good job here. And overall, I enjoyed the show. I enjoyed the promotion. I give this 7.5 out of 10.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have your talent that, you know, more people are familiar with, in the likes of Mark Andrews, Zack Sabre Jr., Tommy End, Will Ospreay. But then you have kind of that next level that I think are going to be joining those names. Like Jimmy Havoc, I think, is just a tremendous character, very strong talent. I think Pete Dunne, I think, down the road will be a really solid talent as well. I put Mark Haskins as someone that a lot of people have seen as well. There's a lot of good talent that was showcased on this show. And Chris Travis, who was a member of Project Ego shortly after this show, was when he was diagnosed with cancer and just made his return over the summer as well. So, I mean, he's another big talent as well. a lot of it over in the UK scene, whether you're watching Revolution Pro, Progress. There's a lot of great talent over there that can sustain shows where they don't have to rely on flying talent over from the US.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these promotions, they have their audience base and they don't go above and beyond that. They cater to that fan base and, you know, It's a very good model for them.
What do you think are the keys to, you know, getting a promotion like this more recognition, you know, overseas in other countries?
I think you have to be limited in what you can expect. I mean, this is not a promotion that's likely going to get television over here, for instance. I think that it's, you know, you go in with reasonable expectations to just be profitable. And I think that the idea of putting a show like this up for free every now and again, I think, mm-hmm. is a pretty good commercial for your promotion. I certainly want to watch more after, you know, sitting down and actually watching a full show. I think the storylines are very easy to follow through with.
And their full shows are on demand.
Yeah, you can get them up there. Their site is progresswrestling.com, and they have an on-demand service where you can they offer their shows and other content as well. They do, like, interviews and stuff up there as well. I think it's a great name for a promotion. I think it plays off itself really well. Chance of, like, this is Progress. It kind of has the double meaning, mm-hmm. as well. You think it's
Chance? No, I think it's cool. I'm just trying to think what's a bad name for a promotion that you don't want that?
I'm just tired of the insert letter CWs of the world. I think anything that's kind of different from that is a nice break.
Mm-hmm.
I give this show a 7.6 out of 10.
Oh,
yeah. So
you could go 1.1 better than me, huh?
Yeah, it was a very good show. All right, let's go to the feedback thread up at the Law Message Board. We'll see what folks had to say about this show. Christian Small writes in, I really enjoyed this show, and it made me interested in looking into more on Progress. I may be a little biased here as I'm English, but nothing beats a UK crowd in my view. They make the shows they watch so much fun, and it adds so much to the environment, which was incredible. It also helps when you're given good stuff in the ring, and we were here. My only real downside to this show was the commentary. I feel it would have been better as a two-man booth, but this is an indie, so I understand why it was just one. Watching the show has led me to their YouTube channel and watching some of their other videos. I have to say they look great, nice production values, and add a lot to the stories. The final thing I want to add is the amount of joy I got seeing Jimmy Havoc's evolution. I watched this guy kill himself in a pointless death match on a random Pro Wrestling 101 show years ago, and now he's one of the top heels in Britain. He looks like a star to me and is a fantastic heel.
All right, we go to Martin in London, who says, I am a regular at Progress, having attended all 21 chapters to date. Chapter 13 was a good snapshot of time, as it was the second show at the Electric Ballroom, and Jimmy Havoc was settling into his title reign that would last for another year and 2 months before Will Ospreay would eventually defeat him. Speaking of Ospreay, this was pretty much the start of his road to the title, with his partner Paul Robinson turning on him, and Havoc going all Reservoir Dogs on him. His growth since the show has been incredible, to the point where Dave Meltzer recently called him the best wrestler in the world for his 3-year experience level. The four-way tag team match was fantastic for its physicality, if not necessarily its booking. El Ligero versus Tommy End did a good job in establishing End as a beast in the company, and the main event ladder match was insane, even though it had a storyline ending that affected it a bit. But the true highlight, and the reason the show was suggested, was Prince Devitt versus Zack Sabre Jr. Devitt was between New Japan and WWE here, and he was massively over, while Sabre proved why he's considered one of the best technical wrestlers in the world and a key component of Noah's junior heavyweight division. Sabre had actually flown back overnight from a Noah show just to have this match, but he certainly didn't show any jet lag in his performance. Progress have had better shows in its history, but this is a good example of its style and vibe, and a good entry point to a lot of the characters, especially Havoc. 7 bemused Chris Camaras out of 10.
Chris from England. Well, I have to say a fantastic choice for this week's show. While some of the references will be completely alien to you guys and some of the matches were a little overbooked, it's safe to say that it's more than made up for by the in-ring action. Every match was solid at worst, with many being sublime, especially the masterclass from Devitt and Sabre Jr. I do wonder how many times John had to pause the video to make notes during the four-team tag match with frantic action when the match broke down before the first eliminations. I would also like to say how smart it was of Progress to give this show away for free, given all the technical issues they had on the show. Why not turn a big negative into a positive in this way? Something many promoters should think about more often. Plus, for anyone who liked this show, Progress have now got their own on-demand streaming service, which has the majority of their back catalog as well, and is well worth the monthly subscription. 8 clowns to the left of me out of 10. That coming from Chris,
A.K.A. Jim Smallman, I think, from the... No. Gosh, if that was not a plug, an endorsement for this company, I don't know what more Chris could say. Yeah. And that is going to wrap us up. Is that all our feedback? Mm-hmm. All right. So thanks to all of you for posting. It was a free show. You can still go back and watch it. A very easy find up on YouTube. Next week, you know, it's a very pivotal time in the history of one Orlando/Nashville-based group in the United States of America. That being TNA Wrestling, which in 2005, way, you could say was progress.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I think many would say. And
yeah, you could say it was unbelievable, Jeff.
It was unbelievable, Jeff Jarrett, that 2005 period was what it was. And what was really unbelievable was one particular match from that time period. If I'm to ask somebody the most famous match in TNA history, maybe not the most watched, but the match you remember the most, I think most would agree, it was the three-way match from September of 2005 involving AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, and Christopher Daniels. Three men who are no longer with the company. And as we go into Bound for Glory in a couple of weeks, which, let's be honest, it could be the last Bound for Glory for all we know.
Could be Chapter 13 for TNA.
We are going to review Unbreakable, Jeff. 2005's Unbreakable pay-per-view is going to be our review next week. And we're going to have a guest next week on the show.
Oh.
It's been a long departure since Nate Milton left us to go start things off with Brian Mann. And they are going to be changing around Review and Impact. So Nate Milton is going to be reunited with myself and Wei Ting next week on the show. We'll chat a bit about Unbreakable and happier times for TNA in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be a real downer at times because you go back to September of 2005, we have that great main event, and it was just weeks before they were going to debut on Spike TV.
Yeah.
The sky was the limit.
No, I feel like, I feel like now is a time to reflect on what TNA is and what it was. And it wasn't always, you know, a promotion that was on its last legs. It was a promotion that was very much thriving and had a lot of high hopes at one point. And I think it's important to revisit that.
Yeah. And maybe also look at the fact that this company, what it can salvage at this point. I mean, given all the things they're facing, can this be a company that operates further when your Destination America TV deal is very much in doubt beyond the end of this year? And kind of a state of TNA show maybe next week,
sure.
Which will be kind of our review of Unbreakable and, yeah, the state of TNA. And there's no one better than – it's going to be the state by Nate.
Okay. Yes.
I could have thought of a better play on words there. The native TNA?
No. TN State.
It might be the official sign-off of TN8, who might be abandoning that name, I think, afterwards.
Oh, really?
I mean, Review and Impact, it's going to be the series finale.
What's he going to call himself now? Just Nate? Yeah, okay.
Doesn't have the ring.
Something. Yeah.
Can't
He'll
be
always be TN8 to me. Just like how I'll always be call waiting to certain people.
Yes. My mom still refers to you as Call Wei Ting.
Call Wei Ting.
It's like, how's Call Wei Ting doing? That's such a great name.
It is.
All right.
Back to that.
That is all for us. Where can people watch Unbreakable, Wei?
Go to YouTube. Oh, yes. You can go to YouTube. Yes. Just go to YouTube. TNA does have their on-demand service.
Does cost a dollar to watch this.
One whole dollar.
Do them a solid, folks.
You cheap losers.
Pay the buck.
Yeah.
That match is more than worth a dollar.
You know how those commercials, you know, for a cup of coffee a day, you could save, make sure a child eats for a month? Let's starve that child for a month. Pay TNA for this one show. You'll get some pleasure out of this.
Wei Ting's a horrible human being, but he will be on the review next week as we go back 10 years in the past to Unbreakable 2005, and that's going to wrap up our look at Progress Wrestling's Chapter 13 event, and we will speak with you next week.
Robinson imploring for the tag on the outside. Ospreay must make it. He's got to be able to make the tag now. What the...